Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. Add this to your list.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
Thank you for adding this podcast to your list.
No.
We have three co-hosts, including myself, from different coasts of the good old country America. We have the good old US of A. We have our California girl, Fumi.
Hi.
And we have our Connecticut cowboy, Tom.
Yo, yo, or I should say howdy.
There you go. And then there's me, Mark, in the great state of New York, which is very snowy tonight. Tom and I on the East Coast are getting some
snow. We'd be getting snow a snow day tomorrow.
Yeah, Tom, are you working tomorrow, Tom? You're going to stay home?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because they're saying that ice is going to glaze over in the early hours of the morning on top of the snow. Yeah. So I don't fuck
it's
around with ice.
Yeah, everyone's saying it's going to be messy. It's a little snowy, rainy over here. How's it in L.A., Foom? Is it nice and warm and sunny as usual?
Yeah.
All right, good for you. Yeah. Well, that's nice. Anyway, so listeners, thanks so much for checking out episode 57 of Add This To Your List. Can I just give a little shout out to the number 57? I just want to say it's a little bit of an honor for me to be hosting. Well, you know, we're all hosting, but for me to be the lead co-host, because I used to live on 57th Street in New York City. That was my first apartment, and Fumi was there years ago.
Yeah, why was I never there?
Well, Tom, we didn't know each other back then.
Yeah,
although,
I don't think you guys knew each other.
I wonder if Tom would have gone to like my big, I had like this huge moving out party when I moved from 57th Street to the East Village, and Fumi was there. I think Fumi, you actually slept over with Kadeen. Do you remember that?
No.
I didn't think so.
Fake
this
news.
This was straight up like 10 years ago. And yeah, I know Kadeen slept over, and I'm pretty sure you slept over with her. I think you guys took either the futon or the bed. I slept on the floor. There was very little furniture. I was moving out. Anyway, shout out to 57th Street back
Aww,
in the day.
Yeah. Memories.
Yeah. So, you know, little connection, personal connection.
Yeah.
But basically, guys, I feel like a lot has happened. It's only been a week. Oscars are over. Award season is over. The Jonas Brothers are back. Who knew
that
the
right?
Jonas Brothers were returning?
Oh,
who asked for that?
I know. Right? I was sort of blown away, but okay, they're back, and we'll see what happens there. A Masked Singer has been unmasked. Actually, they all have now been unmasked.
Yeah.
T-Pain was the big winner of...
We called all of them, though, didn't we?
Especially
we knew.
Greg. My husband Greg knew that it was T-Pain from the start. He was the only one, I think, that I really was not sure. Did you know, Fumi, that it was T-Pain from the start?
I saw people saying it was T-Pain. That one I wasn't too sure of, but I definitely knew it was Gladys from, like, episode two.
Right. You definitely did.
Gladys, we knew. Donny Osmond, Gladys, Donny, and T-Pain were the top three, and I had a feeling it was Donny from the start. But, yeah, T-Pain was maybe a slight surprise, but great voice. I mean, what a fun show. Right? So
why has he been auto-tuning this whole time?
I know. He should release a new album of
his
real deal.
Well, maybe it's
his
strategy, yeah.
Hopefully, maybe. Right? And same with Rumor Willis. We knew it was Rumor Willis, and I have to say, girl, come out with an album. So that's happened. Can. Drag Race is back, although Tom refuses to watch it. So.
Oh, my God. We won't get into it for this particular podcast, but I feel like we need to talk about this first episode. I don't know about you, but...
Yeah, at some point we got to discuss. It's interesting.
Save it for the after show.
Yeah, we'll talk offline once Tom goes to bed.
That was supposed to be shady, but I'm kind of like, yeah.
But you're like, no,
you're
TikTok, everyone, TikTok. But let's get into the biggest news of all, which, yikes, guys. So as you might remember, back in October, I saw on the street, I passed by the one and only Steven Spielberg and my jaw was dropped. I was frozen. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was amazing. But now I have to say, Spielberg, what's going on? Who wants to lead off this discussion? What's going on with Spielberg? Fumi, you want to tell us?
I feel like I should take it because you guys know I stand for the Netflix.
You sure do.
And I feel protective
You're basically working for them. You're just not getting
not
paid.
Not getting paid.
I actually feel... I actually feel both of you can't... give an objective viewpoint in this story.
No, so. No. I totally can, but let's be clear here. So, backstory. Steven Spielberg, prolific director, big movies are his thing. Roma scored, big Oscar buzz, yes. Got some awards. They're now on the playing field of other major production companies, right? Yep. Who release films. I guess Spielberg is irked by this for God knows what reason and feels the need to raise a opinion, some sort of vote to the governors who declare who can be what can be nominated for Oscars.
Yeah, the Board of Governors of the Academy. Yep.
Right.
That Netflix should not be allowed to do so. And to him I say this.
Uh-oh. Are you listening, Spielberg?
Mr. Spielberg, I need you to have several seats.
Oh.
Because while you are extremely talented, and no one's taking away that from him in any way, shape, or form, you're also in your 70s. And you might be a little out of touch with how people like to absorb content now. Just because a movie is in a theater doesn't make it any more Oscar-worthy than a movie on a streaming platform that I can watch on my couch.
Fair point.
Like, what is happening?
But I will say this. One of the stories I read said that he... One of his quotes was that he doesn't understand why Netflix movies aren't trying to get Emmy Awards for Best TV Movie. And if you guys remember, the three of us had an offline discussion...
We never brought it
onto the podcast where I said the same exact thing. I said, I just don't understand how a movie that premieres on Netflix, which you watch on television from your couch, why is that movie not more appropriate for a best TV movie at the Emmys versus the Oscars?
And that is a valid question to really think about because it is a weird kind of fine line where it's like,
It's a gray area. It's a gray area.
It's a gray area. But we all have to understand, like, basically it comes down to, I think a lot of people, especially Fumi and me, but I feel like Tom can understand, a lot of people are getting tired. Don't tell me where I can watch a movie. If I can watch a movie at home, I will watch it at home. And I will still respect it. I will watch it. I will study it. You know, the theater experience is really only for a certain type of person now, you know? And for Steven Spielberg to be saying, you know, I don't want Netflix movies to be considered for the Oscars. Well, like you said, Fum, I just don't think that's really a current way of thinking nowadays.
Nor who gives him the right to decide what films get submitted for Oscars. And granted, I mean, Netflix is making headlines, but this would go for Amazon. We know that Amazon has had Oscar-worthy films.
Yeah, Manchester by the Sea being their most successful.
Yeah, this vote would go against them, as well as if Hulu ever became like a major player in the Oscar field.
Which they probably will soon.
I'm sure they will. This would go against them. So this is really going after streaming. You might be able to start to add Apple and Facebook to this as well. And we'll see if that's really going to hold, you know?
Yeah. And apparently, I didn't realize, I thought this was interesting. I had always thought for you to be eligible, for your feature film to be eligible at the Oscars, it just has to play in a theater for 1 week. I think that must have been what it was maybe years ago. I didn't realize for the past few years under their current, I guess,
structure
contract, but their current structure, you actually don't, there's no minimum. There is no theatrical window minimum at all right now. It's like, whatever. It's if you have a theatrical window, great. If you don't, you're still eligible. So I think a lot of people are realizing, wait a minute, that rule isn't great. And so Steven Spielberg and some people like him want to now have a 4 week window minimum.
But why?
I heard.
Why?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Explain to me why.
So let me ask you guys this question. Are you guys irked at the cast of the Irishman as well? Because they're pushing for a wide release in theaters before it hits the Netflix streaming site?
I personally am, because it's like, hey, De Niro and everyone, who's paying your checks? Zip it, and let them figure it out. You're getting, we already know there are movies coming out soon with Meryl Streep on Netflix.
Like, what? I did not know she was doing a Netflix movie.
Oh, yeah, I don't know what it's called, but I saw it in these articles about Spielberg and everything. She's doing a Netflix movie with someone that's coming out maybe later this year or in 2020. So different names are being attracted to Netflix because Netflix is paying the checks, y'all.
They
so
sure it's are. Like, I don't know just, where they're getting their money from, by the way. But
well,
anyway.
I think they get a lot of money from subscribers, and then I think they're just always kind of just spending and hoping that it comes back their way somehow.
I just don't understand this obsession with the theater.
Yeah.
Like the movie theater.
You know what's interesting about The Irishman is that Scorsese doesn't seem to be so bent out of shape about it, about all this, but his cast is. So that puts him in a pretty precarious situation.
I know, it's so interesting. And I honestly wonder if the cast is only talking about this because right now it's sort of a hot button issue. People have to choose one side or the other. So since they're, you know, they still want to, of course, get recognized by the Academy. So yeah, let's make sure, you know, we side with Academy members who are upset. Mm-hmm. But it's like, ultimately, don't you want to just make a movie and have an audience? Because something tells me everyone will be watching The Irishman the second it comes out on Netflix.
You guys, I gotta say, I think that there's something more to this whole Netflix streaming theater discussion. I think that there might be some sort of money aspect involved here, which is why there's such a push to put it in theaters. I don't necessarily know what it is, and I'm totally speculating, but I think there's something, because otherwise it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Doesn't. And I've heard that a lot just by looking around on social and on the internet, that like a lot of people are saying like Steven Spielberg's upset because he's a rich man that just wants to keep getting richer, and now this will limit him from getting richer. Mm, so yeah, I'm sure money is an issue. Also, we have to remember, I'm pretty sure Spielberg didn't his production company do Green Book? So it's like, what are you complaining about?
They did,
you won Best Picture. So it's interesting. I think you were right, Foom, in insinuating that something has to do with age here, and it's like kind of old Hollywood, and like you should be embracing that Netflix brings millions of eyeballs to something immediately, you know,
and gives opportunity for content creators who are not getting it through major studios.
For sure. Yeah,
like, and let the little people have some sort of opportunity as well, and maybe that's also an addition to it. Maybe it's the feeling of feeling threatened by people who are coming up. Totally. And creating things that people, millions and millions of people, are watching on streaming platforms. But it's something. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something.
That's definitely something. And major people are coming against him, like Ava DuVernay. Different celebs are definitely tweeting and posting like, wait a minute, I don't agree with you. Let's have a discussion about this.
Yeah, you know? This is going to backfire for him.
What do you think, Tom? Because Tom, I know out of the three of us, you are the most eager to see something in theaters. So what do you think about all this?
I do worry that one day theaters might not be in existence. I just love going to the movies. I always have, and I feel like I always will. But I do enjoy watching something at home on Netflix, and I have to say, Netflix puts out really good stuff. They just do. I mean, it's kind of it makes you wonder, like, well, where were all of these writers and filmmakers all these years before they had this platform? Because there's just such good stuff on this.
You just hit it on the head, Tom.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, they make good stuff. So you gotta award them. If it's worthy, you just gotta award them, or you have to at least let them be eligible to do it.
Or at least, like, going back to that, is it like an Emmy consideration or an Oscar consideration? You gotta make those rules super clear. So maybe later this year we'll hear super defined rules of like, what is a TV movie? What is a theatrical movie?
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, interesting stuff. And then one other news item I feel like is worth mentioning. Did you guys hear about this Big Bones lawsuit?
Yeah.
How interesting. Okay, so I'm still sort of processing it all. I'm a little tipsy from doing taxes all day, so bear with me, everyone. But so Bones, we all know Bones. I don't know if anyone's actually watched it, but Bones, starring David Boreanaz and Emily Deschanel, Zoe's sister, was on Fox for years. I want to say it was on
like 13 seasons.
Was it 13
seasons? Yeah.
Dang.
So David Boreanaz is a rich man between Buffy, Angel, and now this.
Yeah.
And then he's low key, but he's rich.
Totally. He's a true TV star. Good for you, Boreanaz. But so Bones. So we know that was on Fox for years. Fox was just hit with a $179 million judgment in this legal battle over profit participation. Apparently, and this was just announced a couple days ago, apparently David Boreanaz, Emily Deschanel, the executive producer of Bones, Barry Josephson, and the writer slash forensic anthropologist who, I guess, wrote the book that the show is based on, her name is Kathy Reichs, they all were owed millions, probably, in profit participation that apparently Fox said they were going to get, and for years they just never got them. Apparently this lawsuit started in 2015, and so for the past 3 years and almost 4 years, nothing's been happening. But so an arbitrator decided Fox was totally self-dealing, which was very interesting. Not a new thing, but something that is a big deal because this was the biggest example of this in the history of entertainment. So basically, if I'm understanding this correctly, the show was created and produced by 20th Century Fox, and they licensed the series to air on Fox. So right off the bat, it's like, okay, yeah, that's all within house. And then, of course, we have the streaming rights for, you know, repeat episodes would then go to Hulu, which Fox has a stake in. So all this money was just circulating to the big Fox executives and not actually trickling. I don't even want to say trickling down. I mean, you're not trickling down that far when you have these major stars and the executive producer. But the next level down was not getting the money that they were told they were getting. So how crazy that, as we're obviously seeing with the big Disney-Fox merger, with all these big companies and all their streaming entities, I have a feeling this is totally going to make everything, you know, everyone's going to have to be forced to be very careful, very clear about where the money is going. Because when you're just sort of circulating it at the top between your different network, you know, company arms, this is how shady things happen.
Yeah, it sure is.
It was fascinating. I mean, they did start that lawsuit when Bones is in production and still airing on Fox.
Right, which is also so interesting.
Yeah, and Fox, I guess, basically was saying, telling Bones creators that the show wasn't profitable when it was. But just as you explained, it was like all circulating within like all the in-house arms at Fox.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of even hard to like keep track of where all the money goes because the studio is making it, but it's licensing to the network. But then the network is licensing it out to streaming services. And then you have to also factor in, what's the word? What's that phrase? When it airs all the time.
Syndication.
Syndication.
Oh, totally. Totally.
You know, all of these things. So I'm happy for the creators and the stars of Fox because everybody should be allowed to have their fair share.
Right,
like,
for
sure. Why keep it all in one?
Yeah, and if the deal is, if the deal is set, the deal is set, and you got to abide by it.
Yeah, come on now. It's so interesting. And apparently, I want to say two out of these three top Fox executives that were named in this lawsuit are now high up at Disney because of the merger. So I wonder what this all will mean for them, for Disney. I don't know. It's interesting. It's crazy. All the shady business side of everything. So we'll see about that. And we would also like to say that, like many people out there, we are heartbroken over the passing of Luke Perry. It was such a surprise, such a shock. As we all know now, he passed away this week from a stroke at only 52 years old, so young. So we just want to say thank you, Luke Perry, for being such a star all these years. I mean, he obviously was loved by many because he was a charming, seemingly nice, good guy. So we're very sad over that and just want to say we're thinking of him. I think that's basically it on our news. Should we get into our list?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's have Fumi go first.
Okay, so the first thing on my list is a series that I just recently checked out, i.e. the other night. It's called Discovery of Witches.
Oh, yes.
It is on Sundance now. It aired the first full season in Europe.
Okay.
Oh. In like London. I think it was on Sky. But it's going to be airing, the American episodes will be airing after Killing Eve on like BBC America.
Okay, so they're pairing it that way.
Cool. Got
it.
Yeah.
And also, Foom, is this on Shudder or?
Yes, it's like a co-production between Shudder and Sundance.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Wow. All right.
So it's based off of a book called Discovery of Witches. It's based off of a trilogy. And it's like a historical fantasy, love, drama, like all meshed in one. It's basically like a more adult version of Twilight, per se.
Okay.
So main characters are Matthew Good and Teresa Palmer.
I love Matthew Good. I love Matthew Good.
Yeah. She's a witch. He's a vampire. They fall in love. They're not supposed to be together. She's a doctor of historical. He's a biochemist. He's trying to find out what's going on because vampires and witches and demons, the creatures, as they call them on the series, are losing their power and like they're just basically fading into the rest of society. First season consisted of 8 episodes, about like 45 minutes like each. I mean, it's an hour when you factor in commercials, whatever. I am going to say it's an add to your list.
Yay. Nice.
Okay.
I want to check it out.
Especially if you like romance.
True Blood.
Really like historic. It is, well, this is the thing. It is an ad, but it is very soft. True Blood, it is
true
not.
True Blood ain't got nothing on this.
True Blood was wacky. Or this ain't got nothing on True Blood was too wacky for me.
I mean, guys, if Twilight was PG, this is like PG-13. Like, it is not.
Matthew Good, I was hoping we'd get to see your ass or something.
You will not, okay? There, first of all, you have to wait like 6 episodes before they finally like, if I can even say, before they bundle their relationship. If you're curious to know what bundling means, it means like spooning with your clothes on. I'm like, what the F? Like, everybody is freaking hot on this show, okay? It takes place in Wales, Venice. Like, it is a sexy atmosphere, sexy locations, hot people. Like, I want to see.
Y'all need the hot sex, yeah.
People get down.
Like, why are you not fucking?
And they are not. So just be prepared for that. I don't necessarily know if American audiences are going to be, like, into how, like, surface level it all is.
Okay.
But, there, like I said, it does have a bit of adventure in it, and that makes it a lot of fun. And Matthew Good and Teresa Palmer are really, have really good chemistry together.
Okay, good.
Cool.
And it's been picked up for apparently, like, a second and I think a third season. I'm not too sure about a third, but it's definitely coming back.
Okay. And you're interested to see season 2?
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'll definitely watch it. I mean, now I'm like invested.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
You know?
I'm intrigued. Yeah.
So that's a Discovery of Witches. Like I said, it'll be airing in America on BBC America and at AMC, and it's going to be paired after Killing Eve, and I believe the first episode airs in April.
Nice.
The second thing on my list is a little documentary about a little club from the 70s era.
I'm so excited to hear you talk about this.
Yes, me too. I'm interested.
Studio 54. Yep. It is on, as we said before, Netflix.
Oh, good. It's on Netflix now? Okay, because I was trying to see it when it was in theaters, and I just never got around to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on Netflix. It is all about Studio 54, all about the founders, all about the, you know, the icon of what Studio 54 represented to New York and to celebrities. It's a great documentary. It's definitely an ad.
Nice.
It is a good amount of running time, i.e. Tom.
Yes.
Not too long.
Yes.
Not too long.
Well, how long is it? Like an hour and a half?
It's like an hour and a half. Okay. Maybe a little more than that, but
It doesn't feel it.
I mean, when you think about like the music you get to hear.
Oh, I'm so
excited.
And
like seeing the people and the fashion.
The outfits,
and like the outfits and actual seeing footage of like people swarming the club on like opening night. And you're like, oh my God, it must have been amazing to be there. Yeah. There's one woman who gets interviewed and she's like, oh my God, it was just like, you just had to get in. And I just remember like there being coat check and you just hear the beat, the bumps and the beats of like disco. And she just like, I threw my coat on the coat track and just gunned it to the dance floor. And it was like the most amazing thing ever.
And I never found my coat ever again.
She never found her coat ever again, but it was like, you know, it was like the one place in New York you could go. You could be gay, you could be black, you could be straight, you could be white, you could be Hispanic, you could be trans, you could be a drag queen, you could be whatever you wanted to be.
Yeah.
And in this like club, it didn't matter. It's like rich New Yorkers mingled with poor New Yorkers, mingled with gays, mingled with straight. It was like this free fall of just love.
We need another Studio 54 today.
Yeah.
Right? And before AIDS. So it was like this place where people just like loved and did whatever, and the sex was crazy. And there was like not a care in the world. So it was really fascinating to see that, but also really also getting a more hands-on approach on the two guys who created 54.
Right. One of them, because I actually love the movie with Ryan Phillippe. I know it's not great, but I still love it from 20 years ago. Mike Myers played the one creator guy. What's his name? Steve?
Yeah, something like that.
Ian Schrager and Steve Rebell.
Right.
They were two friends, basically grew up together in Brooklyn. They are the creators of Studio 54. So Steve Rebell died of AIDS. And so, but Ian Schrager is very much involved in the documentary. He is getting interviewed. They're talking about their time in prison. They're talking about the money laundering. Like, it's very fascinating. And the most interesting thing for me coming out of the documentary is that Ian Schrager, you guys should Google this dude. He is a major New York City developer.
Oh, not surprising.
Do you guys remember the Palladium in New York City?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ian Schrager and Steve Rebell are the ones who started that before Steve Rebell died, and they sold it off.
Interesting. Okay.
Ian Schrager is like the kind of like creator of boutique hotels.
Okay, yeah.
Look him up. Like, he's really, really big in the New York City development game.
So did Donald Trump have a big hand in Studio 54 at all, or is he friends with Ian Schrager?
I don't know if they're friends. I can't speak to that. But in terms of Studio 54, no. It was really just Ian, Steve, and then they had another silent partner who also went to jail, who basically was the one who, like, gave him up to the feds. But it's a great documentary. I mean, it's just a blast. Watch it, add it.
Cool.
That's awesome. Nice, Foom. Do you guys feel like Studio 54 nowadays is almost like Burning Man or something? Like, did the club kind of become now the, like, music festival? And that's
I'd say more
of
Coachella
be?
Than Burning Man.
Really? You think so? I feel like Coachella is not as wacky as Burning Man.
Well, interesting you bring this up, but Burning Man doesn't involve music at all. And the reason why I'm saying this is because a friend of mine who's turning 50 is considering it for his 50th birthday. So we've been researching it, and I always thought it was, like, music. And I was like, Kevin, do you even like the music for that? He's like, dude, it's not music. It's art. And I was like, oh, okay. Interesting.
Totally. Okay.
And I don't know if Burning Man is inclusive. I feel like there's a very niche audience.
They take everybody, which is problematic.
They take everybody, but not everybody goes to Burning Man. I feel like people who go to Burning Man fit a certain type of stereotype. Hippie kind of like vibe.
Totally.
And so I don't really know if you're really going to see a large range of people at Burning Man. I mean, you're in the desert for days, and you can't, like, it's like not...
You don't shower,
hygiene is not...
Yeah, we're not doing it, we decided, so...
Oh, were you thinking about doing it, Tom?
Oh, yeah, well, we were gonna have to, kind of. It's one of those trips where you can't say no.
Okay, interesting.
Well, 50 is a big number.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, oh, God. All right, Tom, tell us what you got.
Okay, I have got two things on my list. The first thing I want to talk about, and I have been debating when I was going to talk about this since it aired in September, but I'm going to talk about A Million Little Things, which is a lot of people say is ABC's answer to This Is Us. Mm-hmm. It just wrapped up its first season, and it got picked up for a second season. First season consisted of 17 episodes. Like I said, it started in September, just finished this past week. The story, basically, it is about four close guy friends who get stuck in an elevator one day for like 5 or 6 hours in this office building in Boston. And they form this really tight-knit friendship. Mm-hmm. And then a couple years later, 5 or 6 years later, one of the friends inexplicably and out of nowhere commits suicide. And so the show is essentially at its core about how his death affects the other three guys and their significant others, because the significant others of each of the characters, they also play a very big role in the show. So it's about friendship, and that's what attracted me from the beginning, because I actually have three very close guy friends who I've literally grown up with my whole life. So it kind of always reminded me of Mike, Joe, and Adrian, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, I could kind of relate. Sometimes I feel like my friends are more my family than my own family, so you know, it kind of spoke to me. But you know, guys, unfortunately, this pains me so much to say this.
Wow. Wow, Tom. I was not expecting this. Okay, go for
it. I was. Were you? I was.
I'm going to say that the show is okay to miss.
Wow.
And yeah, I wanted to like it, and usually I'm the kind of person where if I don't like something, I peace out. Like, I nowadays, with how many options there are out there, if I'm not hooked from the very beginning, I'm usually right. like, that's it, I'm out. But I stuck with it, again, because of the friendship aspect. This Is Us, this show, is not.
Wow.
It tries so hard, and it's just, it's too uneven. There are episodes that are very good, and then there are episodes that are just really pathetically bad.
And you did do the whole season?
I did do the whole season, okay. Yeah.
You gave wow. it a try. I did.
Damn sure gave it a try. It's
just I remember,
too,
Tom, you liked it in the beginning.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
It's too much like a soap opera. It's unbelievable. It's unrealistic. I mean, I love my friends, but like, to give you an example, one of the guys is going to leave to go tour with a band. And on the day that he leaves, and just as he's getting on the bus with the band, the whole caravan of friends show up to send him off. It's like, no. Today you would just send a text message saying, hey, buddy, have a good tour.
Yeah.
Be
yeah.
in touch. I love you. You know, like you, your friends just don't show up for every damn thing. Every time you freaking pass gas, you know, these friends are showing up to like support each other.
Right.
And
right.
that's just not how it works. Yeah. And then also I have a problem with the way that it handled some serious issues. In another episode, you go to find out that the black guy's wife, her character's name is Regina. She reveals that she was sexually abused by her uncle as a teenager, and then by the end of the episode, she never told her mom. She kept it from her mother. By the end of the episode, they both clear it up, and it's just wonderful now. Years of, like, you know, having a very rocky relationship with the mother is all fine and dandy now. Like, you don't resolve issues that in one episode.
No.
Like, you just don't do that.
Take a note from This Is Us, guys.
Yeah,
come
exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. So,
how many episodes was season one, Tom?
17.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. And the men are all good looking. It's a beautiful cast, all of them. They're beautiful. The acting is decent. I mean, they do a pretty good job with the shitty scripts that they're given.
I watched the first episode. It was fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I hate to say it, but it's just, it's okay to miss.
Wow, Tom. Okay. Yeah. Foom, you are not surprised by that. You figured Tom.
I am not surprised. I tried watching this show too, because like Tom said, it was right. like This Is Us. I love This Is Us. I was ready to give it a go. The first few episodes I was not into. I didn't like the whole suicide thing. I didn't like one of the best friends was sleeping with the guy's wife. Like, I was just like not into it at all. And then I felt the same way, Tom. Like, they just, adults don't deal with situations like they do.
No, they don't.
Those characters do. It's just not realistic. And I'm like, if you're going to try to build this ensemble cast of, like, the parenthood brothers and sisters vibe, like, if that's what you're going with, which we know you can do well because, at least Brothers and Sisters, that was on ABC.
Yep. Yeah, yep.
That was great back in the day.
You know, at least if you can do that type of show, we know that you guys are able to carry that kind of series, like, give me something more than what you're giving me.
I feel like it took the Nashville path, right? Where Nashville had such a great premise and such great promise, but they turned it into a soap opera, and there was no need to do that. And ABC did the same thing with A Million Little Things.
Yeah.
Interesting. And it's kind of like we see on premium channels and streaming and, you know, HBO all the time. Very often you have like a, you know, an ensemble cast, but some episodes are only featuring like one of them or just a couple of them.
Yeah, they don't
like
do that
ABC,
here.
Yeah, like the, you know, the broadcast networks still want to always have every scene with all the characters. So that's why it's like
needed.
Everyone's, and it, yeah, and it doesn't feel real that way. It's like, it's okay if I don't see you for like a week, you know, I'll see you in the next episode.
Totally.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, interesting,
totally.
Tom.
So I'm super bummed, but I don't think... I'm going to check out the first... I will check out the season premiere of season two to see if the writer's room takes this feedback and just changes things up. But if I'm not impressed with the season premiere, I'm done. I'm out.
Wow, okay, totally.
I think the show was struggling in the ratings, Tom, but then when they paired it with Grey's Anatomy, I think the numbers came up, so it'll be interesting. You're right, it'll be interesting to see what happens in season two.
Yep.
Wow.
But the good news is, the second thing on my list is a major ad. It is a play running right now in New York. I know, unfortunately, every time Mark and I talk about plays, it's always about New York, and I feel bad because that's so limiting. But, you know, these plays may make their rounds around the United States. So,
Or just come to New
take
York
notes,
for a weekend.
Or just come to New York. But anyway, it is a play called The Cake, and it stars Deborah Jo Rupp, who you guys might remember as the mom on That 70s Show.
Totally.
Remember her? Yes. Yep.
So, I remember her voice very well.
And I have to say, it's not the character. I think that's really her voice. So.
Okay, totally.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it is about, she plays a woman named Della, who owns a very successful bakery in the small city of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And the play opens with her being interviewed by a black woman from Brooklyn. And so, you know, Brooklyn, black woman, white woman from the South, it's not going so hot, this interaction that they're having. And about 10 or 15 minutes go by, and you go to find out that a woman walks in, and this woman knows Della. It was Della's best friend's daughter. So she's like a second daughter. She's like a second mother to this girl. And the black girl is this girl's fiance. So she's a lesbian who is marrying a black woman.
Okay.
And she comes into this bakery in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to ask this woman to bake her cake.
Ah, how interesting. How timely.
And exactly. And so, as you can imagine, Della is conflicted by her religious beliefs. She doesn't necessarily support homosexuality. And so she has to break her best friend's daughter's heart by telling her that she cannot bake this cake for her.
Wow.
But then she has this, you know, the whole play is her going through this mental struggle of, you know, do I hate the sin but still love the sinner? And should I bake this cake? What would her mother want me to do? Because the mother has passed away. So it's fascinating. It's very emotional. The set was pretty cool. I was very surprised by the language. I did not expect some of the words coming out of Denver Joe Rupp's mouth to be in that play. Lots of fucks, lots of C words, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So it went there. It was surprising. I can't say enough good things. It's a very good play. It's in limited engagement right now. I think it's running to the first or second week of April. So if you do have a chance, if you're coming to New York, if you live in New York, go get a ticket. It's well worth the money. And like Mark said, it's very timely. And what I do like is it does not preach to you. So it definitely tries to examine how both of these people could be right. And you know, that's real life. Real life isn't neat and tidy. It's kind of messy. So.
Wow. That is so interesting, Tom. I love that idea. And what theater is it playing at? Is it like downtown?
MTC Stages on 55th.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Which
is
actually a really cool building. It almost looks like a mosque outside. Yeah.
Wow.
So check it out. The tickets are a little pricey, but it's well worth it.
Okay. The cake. Love that, Tom. Very cool. All right. And I will wrap up our list. So I have two items as well. And both, actually, I realized after I was thinking about them that they kind of have a coming of age element to them both. So first item, guys, I'm loving, like laugh out loud, like feeling all the feels, loving Hulu's new show, Pen 15.
I haven't heard of it.
Haven't seen it yet.
Oh, gosh, guys, it is so fun. Of course, the title, I mean, they had me at the title. I have a shirt that says Pen 15. So Pen 15, I mean, unless you were like born, like, I don't know, if you're like a little millennial, maybe you won't understand it, but Pen 15 means penis. And so it takes place in the year 2000 in seventh grade. And the lead actresses are like in their early 30s. They're like our age. And they are playing 13-year-olds, but they're surrounded by actual, you know, 13.
That's funny.
Oh, my God, guys, it's so funny. That's super funny. In that realm, it kind of makes me think of like, you know, Strangers with Candy, or I feel like it's been done here and there where, you know, the lead character is definitely older than everyone else, but everyone's just kind of ignoring that fact. But yeah. So the lead actresses, it's Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle, and they play Maya and Anna. I'm not sure if they were friends in real life, but they are super funny. They have a lot of great chemistry. They're two very awkward, gawky, nerdy seventh graders, and they're good friends. And so I've seen the first two episodes. First episode starts on the first day of seventh grade, and it's just great. The show gets the fashion so great. I mean, the weird hairstyles we did back then, and the cargo shorts, and the stupid accessories. It's so great. And the music budget is great. It has all sorts of songs from 20 years ago. So it totally transported me. When I was watching it, I kept having to pause to be like, oh my God, I remember wearing that. I remember that kind of place that they were in. It's soup. It'll bring you back. It's a good throwback show, but it's super kooky. Fumi, I feel like it's a good, it's sort of in that same umbrella as like Broad City. It's not as funny as Broad City and kooky. It's got a little more heart, but it's, okay. You know, it's fun to see these two girls totally get into these messes. The second episode is all about trying to act cool and like smoke and drink with the cool girls at their house and their mom comes home. And boys come over before the mom comes home, and then it's like, you know, makeout sessions, and they're trying to, oh, it's just so funny, guys. It's
30
wacky.
Minutes?
30 minutes, yep, 30 okay. minutes, 10 episodes in season one. All 10 episodes are out. Like I said, I've only seen the first two, but I'm loving it. I'm going to continue it. It was highly recommended by my group of friends from my hometown. So shout out Hometown Loves. That's our text chain.
Cute.
They were like, cute.
Yeah, they were like, oh my God, the show is basically us, and it really is. It's great. A lot of good detail. It'll totally transport you to 2000. Everything you thought, you draw on your notebooks, you
oh, that little
to,
S thing?
You know what, Tom? I wonder if that they, I would not be surprised if that somehow makes it into the show, because already, like, they have AOL dial-up. It's great. It's a great throwback. I highly recommend Pen 15, and it really, each episode so far that I've seen actually has, you know, a good few minutes of heart. So there is an actual plot and, you know, a little message in each episode. So it's cute. I enjoy it. And it's just fun to see 30-year-olds hang out with a bunch of 13-year-olds.
Right.
It's like, okay. And they're like trying to kiss each other. And it's like, oh, so cringy. So good. So that's Pen 15. And my second item is another coming-of-age story. This was a movie, an independent film that came out in the summer of last year. It was nominated for some Indie Spirits. I finally caught We the Animals. Mm. Have you guys heard of that? Did you see it?
No.
I have not seen it yet, but I've heard of it.
Oh, gosh. You
There's an LGBT angle.
It is. Yeah, there is an LGBT angle, which I did not know, Tom, which I'm kind of glad I didn't know. And I'm not going to say much about that because it was sort of a surprise for me. It's not the forefront of the movie, which I liked. But We the Animals, very interesting film. I'm not sure how much the budget was, but it's a low-budget movie shot in New York State, upstate, like almost near Canada. So you're not getting the city vibe at all. But it takes place kind of like in the 80s. It's definitely not current, not really 90s. It's like maybe mid to late 80s. A family that lived in New York, and the main character is Jonah, this young boy, who lives with his rambunctious brothers, and he has a mother and father who are, they have a very contentious, very volatile relationship. It is violent. So we see how he interprets masculinity and femininity through that violence.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Which is very interesting for sure. And the main actor, I think his name is Evan Rosado. He's only maybe like 12 now. I mean, this kid can say a million things with just his eyes. Like, this kid is young and he is a great actor. Let me see. Do I see his age? His age isn't really on IMDb, but maybe he's a little older. Maybe he was 12 when he did the movie and maybe now he's like 14. But wow, just the way he observes his brothers, people around him, his father, who, Tom, you'll remember from Looking, his father is played by the super great and super cute Raul Castillo.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he's about to blow up any day now. He just needs, like, some big budget movie, and he's going to be, like, the next heartthrob. But he's the father, and Sheila Vand, who has done some different movies. She was in A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, if you guys saw that black and white vampire movie that wasn't so good a couple years ago. But, yeah, so there's you know, some domestic violence at home. There's violence in the vein of boys will be boys, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're learning what he's learning through these observations. There's a little bit of a fantasy element. Every now and then we see his drawings come to life and he's flying and he's sort of trying to escape this. Not that he lives, it's very interesting also, it's very realistic because he doesn't live in a bad place. It's just, you just see how, you know, as you're growing up, like, people can all of a sudden freak out and, you know, violence can happen and then you can laugh. And he's just learning almost how to control his inner animal, you know, which I think is why it's called We the Animals. Yeah.
Yeah. Where was this that you watched it?
I saw a screener on
Indie
Spirits. Yeah. But I think it actually might be on Netflix now. If it's not on streaming, it will be any day now. And I remember back when we all had MoviePass, they were really promoting this movie back when it came out last August or September.
Okay.
But it's really worth a watch. It's a little slow. I'm not going to, you know, tell you it's the most exciting thing in the world, but there's something about it that's very dreamlike, and I really connected to it. And yes, like Tom said, there is an LGBT element, and you learn Jonah's sort of at his young age starting to kind of observe other kinds of boys and like figure out the kind of boy he is. And there's a moment later on that something happens, and it's so interesting, and you really feel for him, and it's good, guys. It really made me feel a lot, and the score is great. The cinematography is great. It's a very well-made little movie that I just want to give a shout out to. I think more people should see it. It's really interesting. I like it a lot. So
cool.
Okay. We the Animals.
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, check it out. I think you both will like it. It's really, it's different while feeling so relatable, if that makes sense. You know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'd say add that to your list. So to recap, let's add it all up. We had, Fumi had Studio 54, which was an ad.
Totally.
And she had A Discovery of Witches, which is also an ad. Yeah. Maybe not as exciting as an ad of Studio 54, but I'm into it. I'm going to check that out. That sounds good. Tom had The Cake, a play in New York City, a major ad. Sounds very interesting. And he had A Million Little Things on ABC, which I'm still surprised. Wow, that went from a something Tom liked to something Tom did not like. So that is a subtraction from your list. Skip that. And I had Pen 15 and We the Animals. Two things, very different tones, but kind of similar growing up kind of vibes. And I say add those to your list as well. Very cool, guys. Good list.
Yeah, all right. Definitely.
So before we wrap it up, let's party like it's 1999. I feel like this is very in the element of Pen 15. We are going to go back, ladies and gentlemen, to...
We've been talking about throwbacks a lot. Like,
we've been talking,
yeah, it's big right now.
20
you know?
Years.
Right? 1999, man. When Will 2K, Big Willie, was God. 20 years ago. So, guys, 20 years ago, 1999, I feel like I've been sort of kind of surprised by some big movies that were sort of in our worlds that were big at the time. Now they're all 20 years old, and then we'll even go, I'll mention a few things even older than that that are all having little anniversaries this year, but I just wanted to kind of do a little throwback discussion.
Definitely. Let's do
it.
Right? Let's dive deep into our middle school years. I think we all were in middle school probably in 1999.
Yeah, 13,
right? Yeah,
13,
exactly.
12, 13.
And let's go down. We're going to talk movies and music that are all celebrating at least 20 years this year. First up, movies. This month, March, brings us...
Tell them.
20th anniversaries of Cruel Intentions,
Love
The Matrix, and 10 Things I Hate About You. Now, I got to tell you guys, Cruel Intentions, we'll just start it off with that. This week, Cruel Intentions turns 20. As you might remember, last year around this time, I saw Cruel Intentions, the musical, which is like a great little parody of the show. And I think actually their album is about to drop on Spotify soon, their whole cast recording. I loved Cruel Intentions. I feel like it still holds up very well. Talk about amazing, amazing dialogue. Some of the best lines in any sort of teen dramedy that you'd ever hear. You know, I'm the Marsha fucking Brady of the Upper East Side, and sometimes I want to kill myself. I loved it. Great cast. What do you guys think? I feel like that movie was a highlight of our young lives.
I agree.
It was groundbreaking, I feel. And I can't really pinpoint why. Maybe because it's like... It was that first movie for us that really started getting into the idea of sex and sexiness, maybe?
Totally. Totally. I mean, even as a kid watching it, not in theaters, but, you know, when I rented it later on, I was even like, whoa, this movie is sexy.
Like, I remember Joshua Jackson is stroking the tennis racket.
Totally,
to Selma
Joshua
Blair.
Jackson.
Yeah,
is,
I was like,
gay.
Oh,
yep. Mm-hmm.
It pushed totally. The envelope. Mm-hmm. It really went there. Like you said, the dialogue was witty and funny and puns galore.
Yeah.
It was a little taboo with like brother and sister, stepbrother, sister situation.
Totally.
And it had something to say.
Reese and Ryan, even though they're no longer together.
I know,
anymore.
But
they have children
us...
to
absolutely who are mini-me's. Yeah. They are literally the identical versions of them. But you're
and
right.
And I have to say, even though this is a little off topic, I just have to give a super shout out to Selma Blair. I don't know if you guys saw her interview on Good Morning
Please
America,
do.
But
yes.
like beautiful, so inspiring. It got me emotional. I just props to her. She's dealing with MS, and she is killing it and rocking it.
She's a champion.
She is a champion. Totally.
And did you know she and Sarah Michelle Gellar are best friends still? And like Sarah Michelle Gellar really got her through the MS diagnosis.
Which I love.
They're still super tight. They posted about each other recently. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So heartwarming. Yeah.
So I'm happy that movie was even able to bring them like long lasting friendships.
I know.
So.
Talk about great casting. That whole cast was like so of that moment and so in their, I don't even say in their prime, because I feel like they're still so good looking and they're all obviously super successful in different ways, but what a great cast. Yeah, Cruel Intentions, we love you. I feel like a similar dark comedy, Jawbreaker, I gotta just give them a shout out. That turned 20 years.
I saw it once and I gotta say I don't remember it at all.
Oh,
I remember
really
seeing renting it.
I don't either.
Oh, okay.
Rebecca Gayheart, right?
Yeah, Rebecca Gayheart, Rose McGowan, and Julie Benz. And that was the first big movie of Judy Greer's career. So it's
like a Mean Girls, Queen Bee type?
Yeah, Jawbreaker had great dialogue. I killed Liz. I killed the teen dream. Deal with it. It was Mean Girls basically pranking their other Mean Girl friend and gagging her with a Jawbreaker. And then when they open the trunk of the car, she dies. And then they have to cover it up. Yes. So it was super campy. I think it was probably written and directed by a gay guy. But yeah, I have to give them a little shout out. I actually have the DVD from the library on the table waiting for me to watch after we are done recording. but yeah, gotta give Jawbreaker some love. We also had She's All That just had a 20th anniversary.
God, that's probably my favorite of the 90s rom-coms.
Really? Now, Tom, I'm about to say something that I feel like is maybe slightly controversial. I have to admit, I didn't like She's All That much. It was fine.
Oh, wow.
But I hear you. I feel like it was a huge movie. It super solidified Freddie Prinze Jr. as a dreamboat.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But something about it was missing for me. But what you guys loved it.
I did.
I wouldn't say that I loved it, but it was definitely part of the 90s rom-com, like, at least in the top five.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely a biggie. That was definitely one of the biggest. And that song, Kiss
Sixpence
Me.
Not the Richer.
Oh, my God. That song was so big. Yeah. But my cousin and I used to get a kick out of the scene when they go to that weird art performance.
Oh,
and
my God,
midgets are on stage, and the one is like, my soul is an ocean.
That. Yeah, Tom, little people.
Little people, sorry.
Oh, my God. Do you want to hear a fun fact, Tom, that I just read? Well, actually, I think I knew this a while ago, but I forgot. Entertainment Weekly talked about it in their recent rom-com issue. Do you know who wrote those weird art scenes?
Who?
M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh.
No.
Yes. He came in to do a final draft of the movie and be a little script doctor. And he added in some weird elements, of course. Why would he not?
Of course he did.
But I mean, that line where the one was like, my soul is an ocean, my car is a Ford. It's like, it's still.
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah, that's it. And I remember, weren't they singing like, be silent, be still. Be
yeah, and then one silent, is like pretending to choke.
Oh
one
my God,
like,
yeah.
I think it's like the environment. And
then Freddie Prinze Jr. was like doing the hacky sack thing
back
in the day.
Yes,
Anyway. Moving on, a couple other names we got to give a shout out to. Office Space turns 20 this month, and I feel
I don't
like,
understand the love.
Oh, yeah? I liked it.
I don't
it.
Get that movie, and like my boss quotes it nonstop, and I'm
still?
Like...
Still?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to agree. I don't understand the obsession with this movie either.
I'm like, what the fuck am I missing?
Except the staple scene. What is that? How does that staple
scene
go?
Oh, yeah, my stapler.
He quotes that, yes, he quotes that all the time, and I'm like...
Yeah.
That is funny, though. Yeah.
I like how Fumi likes the stapler. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I feel like that movie came out at a time when we were a little too young, I think, to understand
that,
obviously.
Yes, I
think
so. And for
you know, we didn't really know what office life was like. But I feel like that paved the way for the success of The Office, you know?
Yep.
I feel like that
and
opened
Parks
up...
And Parks and Rec. And,
totally.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Absolutely. Yeah, that opened the door for workplace... For modern, super awkward, realistic, grounded workplace comedy, you know? So, yeah. Then we had... Okay, we have to talk about The Matrix, because The Matrix came out 20 years ago this month, and I feel like... Oh, really? Wow!
You know me in sci-fi, okay? So...
Okay,
you know,
but
I've only
seen
The Matrix once and never saw any of the sequels.
The sequels
I literally
were bad,
just have
huh?
this conversation with people at work, and it was like, somebody said something about Keanu Reeves, and I burst into laughter because I thought it was a joke. was like asking me if I had watched a Keanu Reeves movie, and I was like, no.
Oh, well, the John Wick movies are apparently very good. The ones that are like a huge.
Who told you that? I lied to you.
People who saw it, and I haven't seen them, so.
Oh, the John Wick movies? Is that what you're talking about, Tom? John Wick? I did watch the first one. It was fine. I mean, it's an elevated action movie. It's not really all that great. But wow, okay, well, putting Keanu aside and sci-fi aside, can we at least. I mean, The Matrix.
It was groundbreaking.
All the visuals, the action, all the CGI. I mean, you know, that we saw time and time again. It became so old with the whole bending over backwards and slow motion thing.
By the third one, you were like,
oh. Yeah.
Even Scary Movie spoofed it. But whatever happened to Carrie Ann Moss?
Well, she wasn't good question. Wasn't she just in something? Was she in like 13
I feel like
Reasons
she was,
Why
yeah.
or something?
Yeah,
or
something like that, yeah.
Wasn't she on a show or something that I didn't watch? I don't know. Something like that. Well, sorry, Carrie Ann.
Moving on.
Well. Moving on. 10 Things I Hate About You. I'm not going to really... I thought it was fine.
I know a lot
of people love that. Heath Ledger became a star from that movie, of course. But can we talk about a rom-com I personally loved? And... fun fact, it came out on my 12th birthday. Never Been Kissed.
Oh, cute. Oh. This is my number one.
Yes,
my number one.
Michael Vartan is such a sweetheart in that movie. Oh my God.
Absolutely. Talk about another great cast. Drew, super cute. Molly Shannon and John C. Reilly as her co-workers. And of course, David Arquette, little like Scream reunion, was her brother.
It had great music.
Great music.
Madonna. I just love the concept of like this older woman going back to high school to fit in with like the popular crowd. Yeah.
Josie Grossi.
But like she had heart. Josie Grossi. And this was honestly the best rom-com from 99.
I totally agree with you, Fumi. This was of the late 90s, maybe not all the 90s, but late 90s, Never Been Kissed instantly felt like a classic. Like, as you're watching it, you knew, like, whoa, I'm going to watch this a million times.
Yes.
And I feel like it was Love, Simon's number one inspiration, actually.
Oh, interesting.
That's interesting. How so, Tom?
Doesn't she, at the end, doesn't Drew Barrymore write this whole letter about meet me at such and such a place?
Yes,
she
totally does. Totally. Yeah, you're totally right. Yep.
She meets the teacher, Michael Vartan, on what, like the baseball field?
Yes.
So
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so, and you know what? I feel like, is Octavia Spencer in Never Been Kissed? Or am I totally...
She is. She is Drew Barrymore's co-worker.
Yes. Okay, it's funny because I forgot that. And Jessica Alba was in it. Wow. And James Franco. Yep. Oh my gosh. Wow. Talk about a crazy cast.
Yeah.
I love that movie. Drew, we love you from Never Been Kissed. Maybe make a sequel one day. We'd love that. Thank you.
Oh my God.
And then, okay, wrapping up movies because then I know we got to get to music. We got to also give some love to The Mummy. No? I feel like The Mummy was a big deal 20 years ago.
I love the sequel. But I didn't like the first one.
The sequel was better. I agree, Tom. The Mummy Returns was better. But The Mummy with Brendan Fraser, back when he was good-looking.
He was cute,
yep.
Oh,
and Rachel Weisz. Oh, yeah, back then?
Before I even knew I was gay, I was like, why do I keep watching this movie? Because this guy is fucking hot as hell.
Did you, Tom, watch him in the George of the Jungle movie?
I did not.
Oh, well, I mean, you might want to go back and Google. I mean, loincloth.
Okay. But, I know what I'm doing tonight.
Back in the day, 20 years ago, when he actually was decent looking, I feel like this movie really, like, catapulted this whole action, I don't even want to say horror, but, you know, action, adventure, horror movie genre and kind of reinvigorated it for the more modern era. But I thought it was pretty cool.
No, I liked the Mummy movies.
Yeah.
They were adventurous and fun.
Yeah, yeah. And then one last thing, not 20th, but 40th anniversary this May of Alien, arguably, I think, one of the scariest movies of all time. But Tom is giving me an eh?
I don't understand the obsession with Alien.
Wow.
Wait, can I just tell you guys that I watched Predator?
Oh, God.
And I remember it was on Mark's list, and he was like, this is garbage with a capital G. And I have to say... it was so fucking stupid.
Oh, God.
See? It made me laugh. Like, I actually started to take it as a comedy.
What is Sterling Gay Brown thinking?
So dumb.
Was it supposed to be funny at all, Foom, or no?
I hope it was. It was hilarious.
Oh, God. You can smell that from a mile. You're like, oh, God. All right, and real quick, before we wrap it up, now we get to the even more fun part. We're going to go down memory lane and talk about songs from 20 years ago. But before we get into 20 years, actually today, the day of this recording, 30 years ago, Like a Prayer by Madonna came out.
Wow.
Can we talk about how that,
can we give her a round of applause,
yes,
please?
That's her biggest... I mean, obviously, she's had a million songs, but I feel like that is definitely I mean, it's got to be in her top
that
five.
That in Vogue, yeah.
I mean, that was, like, huge, like a
princess. I would argue that that's her number one.
You think
and
that's
then,
her number one? Yeah.
And then, like, a virgin, number two.
Yeah, like a virgin,
between,
like, point.
Vogue. Between those two.
Music. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, she's had so many, of course. But, yeah, I agree, Foom. I feel like a Prayer is up there. Good for her. 30 years ago today, breaking barriers, making controversy. There you go. Now, 20 years goes to... Now, who put in our Google Doc... Who wanted to talk about Back That Ass Up?
I did, because it is the 20th anniversary. I was dying of laughter because I was like scrolling through my IG, and the guys who did the song made like a classical version of it.
Oh, okay.
So bomb. I will send it to both of you guys. Ooh, I mean.
Yeah, I want to hear
fantastic.
It.
I love that. Oh, yeah. I mean, that song
fantastic.
Was juvenile. You did good 20 years ago. That
throw
was...
a violin on that shit. It is sophisticated.
Oh, I like
telling
that.
Telling you.
All right. I'm thinking of Will Ferrell and Anna Gasteyer years ago on SNL, like when they would like do their operatic
versions. Oh my God, yes.
Maybe they sang that song. I feel like I have a memory of them singing that song. But yeah, Back That Ass Up turns 20 this month or maybe last month. Can we also talk about My Name Is from Eminem?
Wow, yeah.
That was like his first big song,
right? That song
right?
does not stand the test of time.
Oh, you don't think so, Tom?
No, I think it's obnoxious as all hell now when I hear it.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
It's not one I would want to like replay right now, but I feel like that really put him on the map. Living La Vida Loca, Ricky Martin.
Yes.
20 years later,
when
still
that comes
looks
on
great.
90s on 9 on Sirius, I crank that shit up and I am like hanging onto my steer wheel for dear life.
What was the award show that he performed that at? And it was boom,
MTV
Ricky
Awards.
Martin has arrived. Was it MTV Movie Awards?
Or the VMAs, one of them, yeah.
That was phenomenal.
I mean, yeah, he really came out.
He came out in the leather pants, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally, yes. And I remember everyone was like,
and he's sexier now.
Yeah, he looks amazing now. But I remember everyone was like, he's so stupid. He's a guy that dances. And I was like, let him dance.
Yeah.
God. And play with his candle wax in the music video. Another song that turns 20 that has a very special place in my heart. Blink-182's What's My Age Again? I love
that. That's a great song.
That was
amazing
20 years ago. Also 20 years ago in this month or in the next couple months, J-Lo's If You Had My Love, which wasn't a great song, but that started J-Lo's music career.
Was that on the album On the Sixth?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm, that and Waiting for
to
Tonight.
This day, her best album.
Yeah, yes. Probably. Yeah, I agree.
On the Sixth, yep.
Yes.
Yeah, that had such a moment. She was such a 1999 like star. That she had no trouble at all going from movies to music.
No,
maybe because she used to be a dancer back in the day. But man, J-Lo, 20 years going strong with her music, and also turning 20 years old. Two songs that are pretty annoying. Let's just give them a little shout out. All Star by Smash Mouth, a song I think we're
annoying.
All ready to just. Go away. That turns 20. And a personal favorite of mine, I'm Blue.
No, that song is the fucking bomb. Take that back. That is Euro techno trash at it is absolute finest.
Oh my God.
What happened to them? What are they called? Eiffel 65?
Eiffel 65. And I remember when the controversy came out that like some people were like, what is he? Is he saying I'm in need of a guy? And if you go back and listen, I'm in need of a guy.
That's so...
Wow.
I'm in need of a guy. It's not. He doesn't say that. But
no, it's not. Yeah. It's not that smart to even try to give us a little subliminal message there. But I, Tom, you might think it's trash. I remember calling my local radio station requesting that song being played.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
remembering
it's the best.
The days you had to call your
local
radio.
Yes, I used to call Z100 all the fucking time. KTU,
Yes, Elvis Duran, play my jam.
And then when it would come on, you'd be like, oh my God, they took my song request.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was so exciting because back then we had CDs, of course, but it was so awesome when your favorite song would randomly be on the radio. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
So that was me with I'm Blue Daba D. But
That's
anyway,
funny.
So that was our little throwback. Maybe we'll do another one of these later this year for other little milestones of our favorite late 90s things. But yeah, so that was our little 1999 party. And that is episode 57. I think that's all we got, right, guys?
That's
all
she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Jinx.
So thank you, listeners, for checking us out. Make sure you are following us on social and subscribing to us on all the platforms we're on, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play.
Yep.
And thank you, Greg, Jay, and Allie, for your contributions to our podcast. And I think that's it. We'll see you next week. Some more great topics and recommendations.
Bye, y'all.
Ciao.
Bye.